And I continued for 12 years. I had been invited. I had completed my Master of Science degree at Western in London. And I was invited to go to the medical department to do a PhD. And I had just turned 60. I spent 1 year there. And I said to myself, even if I discovered the cure for cancer, nobody would care. They just could not be interested in someone whose interest was in nutrition. So I knew I wasn't in the right direction, but I knew if I gave it up, there was nothing there for me. But I did. I changed directions, and I was traumatized. I have 12 years of science. I know something is working here, and what am I going to do with it? So the Fanshawe College in London allowed me to teach lay people, and I taught a course called Human Biology and Food, and we had it every Wednesday night for 3 hours, and nurses and some chiropractors and mostly grandmothers and mothers and a few fathers came. And the next thing happened, and I gave 2 lectures on digestion as well as many lectures on vitamins and minerals. And I began getting telephone calls. Mrs. Gotchel, do you do consultations? And I'd never thought of doing that. But I finally said, well, yes. And I lived in a farm near Exeter, and they'd come to my house. I didn't charge them because that was not the reason I went into this at all. And I didn't know how to charge them if they needed help on which their life depended. I just can't jive that in my mind that here are people that are victims and you're making money off them. I just couldn't, it never sat right with me. At any rate, before you knew it, 3 years passed, and I had 600 cases that I had studied diligently. And I realized that the diet was working for a multitude of things. And I'm going to read you in a few minutes some of the case studies that I got together during those 6 years. I had 400 people come, and I used to call them long distance because they wouldn't call me when they were getting better especially. So I had a big telephone bill. But I kept their records very, very carefully. And it was doing the most marvelous things. And I'm going to read you some case histories now that some of you may be interested in to show you that digestion very well may be the great secret of life. Just recently, I was reading a book by Michael Crichton, the mystery book, you know, from Emergency Room and from the Andromeda Strain, that Michael Crichton. And this was a case of need. The last time anyone counted, there were 15,000 named diseases of man and cures for 4,000 of them. Yet it remains the dream of every young doctor to discover a new disease. That is the fastest and surest way to gain prominence within the medical profession. Practically speaking, it is much better to discover a new disease than to find a cure for an old one. Your cure will be tested, disputed, and argued over for years, while a new disease is readily and rapidly accepted. So that this is true. Having spent 12 years in the university, I can vouch for this statement, and he's a doctor himself, so he knows it's true. There's another one some of you might enjoy about quackery, which some of us have been called, you know. And this was a quotation from Robertson Davis, one of our gems of Canada, Robertson Davies. And it was his 1994 bestseller right before he died, and it was called The Cunning Man. And it's a fictional novel, and it has to do with a young boy whose father was a newspaper publisher, and his business was in northern Saskatchewan, right next to an Indian reservation. So as a child, he would wander around the reservation and pick up some of the healing arts of the native people. Well, subsequently, he went to the University of Toronto and became a doctor. And when he went out to practice, this is what he had to say. Already, his name was Dr. Hula, already a legend was growing up about me. It was suggested that I used unconventional methods, and there is nothing a professional group mistrusts so nervously as it does anything that appears unconventional and that has not been thoroughly written up in the journals. It may be quackery. Worse still, it may be effective. And if it is both quackery and effective, it is utterly hateful. But I was not a quack. My dictionary says that a quack is somebody who professes of knowledge of which he is ignorant. But I profess nothing of the sort. I simply profess a knowledge of which a great many of my professional colleagues are ignorant. So I'm going to read the case histories for you to show you the large span. When I was doing the consultations and I was teaching at the same time, I was teaching up in Kitchener, Hanover, Walkerton. I would go anywhere that anyone would listen. And a mother came to me. Her first child was at that time 3 years old. And from the year that she gave, at 1 year she gave up nursing him. And from that day on, no matter what formula they tried, this child had the most severe intractable diarrhea. He would have to go to the hospital each time and get intravenous. They used all the antibiotics, and he was getting worse. And she came to see me with her father, and I didn't have a book written by then, and I gave her sheets and sheets of paper, and lo and behold, the diarrhea stopped. The daddy made a yogurt maker, and they were all into it. And the last time, I followed her every year. They lived in Kitchener, and they moved away finally. He was a minister, and the father was a minister. And I hope he's well, but last time I spoke to her, she had four more children, and every one of them was on the diet. When you see miracles like this, you have to wonder what's with the other food that you've been told is good for you. High carbohydrate diet. No eggs. All backwards. The second case is quite interesting. I was doing a book signing up at the Trent University bookstore in Peterborough, long before I moved to that part of Ontario. And there were many people there, and one woman came up to me and she said, "My husband is scheduled for surgery for ulcerative colitis. He also has schizophrenia." I remembered those nightmares that Judy had. They were like schizophrenia terrors or attacks. And she said, "But I'm going to get a book anyhow." Well, I remembered her because she was an artist and she had quite a following. And about a month later, she called me up and she was hysterical. She said, "Mrs. Gottschall, I'm terribly worried about my husband." "Well, how is his ulcerative colitis? How did the surgery go?" "Oh, he didn't have surgery. We put him on the diet. And he got better." "Well, why are you worried?" "Because he's losing weight." And I said, "Well, tell me what he weighs now." "He weighs 215. "Well, what did he weigh when he started the diet?" "He weighed 265. And he was dangerously obese." I said, "Well, why are you so worried? You're seeing a miracle." And I got her quiet. And then I got a call from her a few months later where they were going to England, and they had one suitcase packed with the muffins. He was still staying on it. And when they got to the airport, they were so afraid that would be the suitcase that got lost that they redistributed these muffins into all their clothes and everything. So this brings up a very important point. There is a subgroup of obese people, and of course Dr. Atkins said it first, that if they continue to eat the so-called standard American diet, which the acronym is SAD, if they continue to eat that way, they cannot lose weight. I mean, all these Weight Watchers programs, because they don't want to get in trouble with the agriculture and health department, they always include a couple slices of bread for the carbs. But in fact, it's very difficult to lose weight when you're eating the grain carbs. And this man was one of many that showed me that this morbid obesity, and he was eating maybe 3,000 calories a day and other foods, but lots of butter, that it is connected with what Dr. Atkins said, with the carb intake. Matthew. Little Matthew was 3 years old. His mother was taking my class in Walkerton, and she came to me after the class and said, "We have a three-year-old child who cannot move his bowels. And we've had him to Children's Hospital in London, and I think they're going to operate." And I had remembered when Judy went through this pendulum effect of months of constipation where we'd have to use stool softeners, and we poor little child would sit there and strain, and then these months of diarrhea. And I thought to myself, there is a relationship here. So I still haven't written the book and gave her all these papers. He cleared up in 2 weeks. We have had the most interesting cases of constipation. A mother nursing her baby, no other food, the fourth baby in the family, fourth child in the family, came to visit my daughter while I was there. And she said, Mrs. Gottschall, will your diet help me? My baby is constipated. And I said, well, she's not eating any food, but maybe if you go on the diet, you're vegetarian, it shouldn't interfere with your vegetarian philosophy. I said, you go on the diet, and instead of baking all this bread that you're baking, just make the muffins. That was no big deal. In 3 days, on mother's milk, this baby started moving her bowels. And I don't know the answer to that. I wrote to specialists who specialize in infant feeding, and no one has answered me. Because it also happened to a couple other babies, one with epilepsy and diarrhea. And the epilepsy was very bad. He was having seizures 6 and 10 a day, and they were grand mal seizures. The mother was nursing him and feeding him cereal. And, of course, when she came to see me, I said, get him off the cereal, and you go on the diet. And not only did the epilepsy clear up, the diarrhea cleared up. And I checked on him for 2 years later. He was perfectly fine. He stayed on the diet a year and a half, and then he went back to eating moderate amounts of the foods that were illegal on the diet. I think there was one other infant. Oh, yes, the Wingham lady. The Wingham lady called me hysterically on the telephone. Her fourth child was not moving his bowels. He was just a neonate. And she said, you don't know what it's like to be diapering a baby every day and not finding anything but urine. She says, it's horrible. And actually, she appeared on the Jeannie Petty show with me. So he was less than a year, of course, and the public health people have come out with don't give honey to a baby less than a year. It's a lot of foolishness, but nevertheless, I had to follow it. And she had to get a pressure cooker to sterilize the honey above boiling temperature, and she ran around like a maniac trying to find a pressure cooker. And she put the child on the infant formula in the back of the book because she was not nursing. And in a week, he was all better. All better. So we've had some interesting cases with the constipation bit, too. The last one is quite interesting. I think my first book was out, and I received a call while I was teaching at Fanshawe one evening, and I called the lady back. She lived in a beautiful part of Toronto. I keep forgetting the name, but I should have it here just a minute. Kleinberg. And she said, Mrs. Gottschall, I must tell you this. She said, I'm a lawyer. My husband's a medical doctor, and he bought me your book because I have one of the worst cases of lupus. It's called Behçet's disease. And what it does is cause ulceration of the eyes, ulceration of the genitalia, Crohn's disease, and rheumatoid arthritis. And she said, my husband bought me your book, and I went on the diet, and I'm practically off of all my medicines. And then at Christmas time, I heard from her. She said she was doing well. But I must read you the last note she sent me. I've never met her. It's a long time. Dear Elaine, March 3rd, 2000. It is a long time since I've been in contact, but I wanted you to know that your book continues to be a source of help, and I have sent copies to friends all over the world, as far as Japan. Also, I'm in my first year at the Toronto School of Homeopathic Medicine. No more lawyer. Training to be a homeopath. And I gave a presentation today on the book to my 12 classmates, complete with nut bars from the recipe section. I'm sure they will find the diet most useful in connection with patients they take on. Many thanks for your inspiration, Fran. And then 2 weeks later, I got, Dear Elaine, would you be kind enough to send me 2 copies of Breaking the Vicious Cycle? And she enclosed so much money, I have to send it back to her. Let me know if this is enough. I'll send more. many thanks, Fran. Okay, now those are the case histories. There is one testimonial letter that I always read, and it is undoubtedly, it shocked me as much as any I have ever read. I got a letter, July 10th, 1994. Dear Mrs. Gotchel, I am 29 years old and have had Crohn's disease since I was 17. My twin sister and younger sister also have Crohn's. I have had 6 surgeries and have been hospitalized 48 times. Indianapolis. This, just as an aside, this girl married someone she didn't even know to get in on hospitalization. I have had 6 surgeries and have been hospitalized 48 times. Recently, I had a Hickman catheter inserted and was on home total parenteral nutrition, where they do feed a very good diet through the veins. It's all digested, of course, or it couldn't be put through the subclavian vein. You can't put undigested food into the blood system. Today, I am taking prednisone and Flagyl and vitamin shots. I am 5'7 and weigh 100 pounds. My nutritious status is poor, owing to the fact that I have only 4 feet left of my small intestine and half of my colon. Now, God gave us 23 feet of small intestine, and the reason it's so long is that it takes time to digest food, and as the food goes through, it is slowly broken down by enzymes on the intestinal cells, and then, only then, will it be absorbed into the bloodstream to give you the essential nutrients. What the patient takes beyond his ability to digest does harm. So at least the medical profession knows they dare not put undigestible food in this TPN, the amino acids, and hopefully some glucose and some fatty acids, and vitamins and minerals. My twin has had one surgery where 3 feet of her terminal ileum, that's the end of the small intestine that attaches to the beginning of the colon, 3 feet of her terminal ileum was removed. Interesting, if any of you have experience with Crohn's disease, the classical case of Crohn's, just where the 23 feet of small intestine ends, the cecum, or the first part of the colon, starts, and the cecum, which is part of the ascending colon, where the appendix is actually, is generally where Crohn's disease will start. Now, you only have to have a year of microbiology to know that the greatest amount of bacteria in the whole gut is at that cecum. And yet, after 50, 60 years of research, after selling almost 3 million books and having testimonies all over the internet and Amazon.com, the medical profession innocently says we don't know what causes it. The bacteria, whether mutated or whatever, are very, very much involved. And when we use this diet, what we are doing is giving them minimal nutrition, because they eat fiber, we can't digest fiber, and they eat any of the other foods, like lactose and milk, that people with these diseases cannot break apart. So if they can't be broken apart, they are not going to flow into the bloodstream, and they go down to that colon, and this is what these involved bacteria are. Now, I don't blame anybody for not identifying which bacterium it is, because they mutate. And there are not tests for every single mutated E. coli or Clostridium. An interesting paper recently came out talking about mutations of ordinary E. coli. Most of you know that when you hear E. coli, it has to do with the Walkerton incidents or with something bad that shouldn't be in your intestine. But in fact, E. coli is usually a healthy, normal inhabitant of the colon. But they have been finding toxic E. coli for years. And this is an interesting paper that came out of Cornell University in 1998. It was done by the Agriculture Department on grain-fed cows. Any farmers in the audience? Grain-fed cows. Cows are usually all summer long and fall and spring out grazing. And that's how it used to be. And of course now, to fatten them up, especially when they're in the feedlot, ready to be butchered for consumption, they gain weight quickly if they're put on a high grain. Well, what Cornell University found was that they can't digest a high starch grain diet. And as the bacteria in their large intestine starts eating that stuff because they have not digested, they have not absorbed it, what happens is that the starch and the sugars turn into acid. And has anyone in here know the term pH? pH is the way of determining or measuring acid and alkalinity, which is the opposite. They found that as the acids form, when you make yogurt, this happens. When you make yogurt, you have lactose, and the culture that you put in the yogurt will change that lactose into a good acid, lactic acid, and galactose, which is not an acid. At any rate, these Cornell researchers found that because of the high grain diet that they could not digest and absorb, they were fermenting it. The colon bacteria were fermenting it, forming these what they call volatile fatty acids, lowering the pH. The pH goes from 0 to 14. Our blood is 7.2, something like that. The colon bacteria usually ranges around 6. It had dropped considerably, and when that happened, the E. coli became pathogenic. Pathogenic. When they announced that Walkerton terrible thing, I thought of one farmer who was a big farmer in Walkerton. I knew him. His child had cystic fibrosis, and they had called me for consultation. And I'm sure, because he's very, very connected to the agricultural college, I'm sure that the farmers who were feeding the cows the way he was had something to do with the E. coli outbreak. I'm reminding you, E. coli is not a pathological bacteria unless something happens to it. And in this Cornell study, too much fermentation in the colon produced a very, very high acid, low pH environment, which affected the normal E. coli and made them toxigenic E. coli, which have killed a few people. Do you get that? Okay, is it clear to you?
This is the end of Side 1. Please fast forward the tape and continue the program on Side 2.